My guest today, Luke Salisbury, is the author of The Answer is Baseball, which, when it was published, was hailed by the Chicago Tribune and nationwide as the best baseball book of the year. Luke has also written three works of fiction, The Cleveland Indian, Blue Eden, and Hollywood and Sunset, which won Best Historical Fiction in 2006 from USA Book News, among many other honors. Luke began his professional career as a teacher of the third grade in the Bronx and spent much of the 70s living by his wits. He's been a social worker in Chelsea, Mass., attended the Boston University Creative Writing Program, and has taught at Bunker Hill Community College in Boston for the past 25 years. I had the pleasure of meeting Luke at a recent writers' conference I attended. Welcome, Luke. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
You have an amazing family history, Civil War, so much going on. Can you share some of that with our listeners?
Well, it so happens that there were three generations of Salisburys went off to wars, and they happened to be the three biggest wars. My great-grandfather left a seminary in upstate New York to join the 24th New York Volunteers and then was terribly wounded at the Battle of Antietam. We've just had the anniversary of the Battle of Antietam, which still remains the bloodiest day in American history. And I became fascinated with his story, especially because his son became a military surgeon, my grandfather, who was in World War I and again in World War II. And then my father signed up for World War II and was missing in action, and they didn't know where he was. He'd actually been wounded very badly and taken prisoner. He survived, by the way. He's 90 years old and lives in North Carolina. Mm. And just as growing up, this sense of war and the fatality of it seemed to just hang over the family. When I was little, I actually would play with the boot my great-grandfather was wearing at Antietam. It had a pencil through the Manet ball. Manet ball is what the Confederates fired, where the Manet ball made the hole through the boot. And my father and I were examining it. It now belongs to a historical society in upstate New York. And my father was looking very carefully at the boot, and I realized he was looking to see whether the bullet went through the front or the back. That was the cornfield. You probably couldn't tell which side you were being shot at. But apparently my great-grandfather was shot from the front, not running, Elaine.
Hmm. And how have you written about that in some of your novels?
Well, I'm actually writing three novels, one about each one of these men that went off to war, and I've completed the Civil War novel. And it's a combination of a narrative by the father, who actually was in the New York State Assembly, and the son. And the reason I make it as a novel is I have some letters, and I played with the boot as a child. But what about the motivations of the people? In the novel, I have the father manipulating the son very much for his own political ends, and he's an abolitionist, and basically putting his son where his own mouth is, and the son thinks about it, doesn't want to go, and then does go off to war. And the other part of war, well, one thing, the Civil War is just fascinating. If you can imagine going into war without wearing a metal helmet, you're wearing a cloth cap, a kepi, without any kind of body armor on, and the worst of all is when you got hurt, the medical stuff. And that fascinated me because of my grandfather being a surgeon. And if you got wounded in the Civil War, if you were wounded in the arm or the leg, chances are it was going to be sawed off and amputated. Two Salisbury fathers went down to find their sons. They knew one of them had been wounded after Second Bull Run. By the time they get there, the 24th has already fought at South Mountain and at Antietam. They arrive the day after the battle, Keedysville, Maryland, and in 4 acres of wounded men screaming, dying, surgeons sawing off arms and legs into piles that were as high as the tables they were working on, they find their sons.
Hmm.
And they talk the surgeon out of amputating. My great-grandfather had had the bullet that went right through his ankle. His cousin had a ball that was lodged on his kneecap. The surgeon looked at the fathers, said, one of these boys will survive if he has a constitution of iron. The other will be dead in 10 days. This is exactly what happened.
Hmm.
So I, in the novel, wanted to write about Civil War medicine and how people recovered psychologically and otherwise, because a family story I did know, and this is something about the Civil War I think a lot of people don't know, is my great-grandfather got to run a piece of silk through his ankle for a year, once a day, to keep the wound from closing on the surface. They didn't know why, but they knew if it closed on the surface, it would become infected. And by the way, 1 million casualties in the Civil War. 500, 600,000 dead, many from disease, 1.1 million casualties in a nation of 30 million people. It was really something.
Yeah. What's the title of this novel?
No Common War. It's a hell of a story.
Yeah, I'll say. Okay, now I know that your other passion is baseball. So why your fascination with baseball? And tell us about your book.
Oh, my. I've written a number of baseball things. I wrote a book back in 1989 called The Answer is Baseball, which was a search for the best baseball trivia question ever answered. And it was really fun. I wrote it for Times Book. And it was not a question and answer book. I could ask a question like, who was the first Indian, Native American, to play baseball? And then write a whole chapter talking about the first Indian played in Cleveland, Cleveland Indians. He played in the 1890s. Major League Baseball was becoming huge in the 1890s. The sense of the enclosed countryside or enclosed piece of the frontier in the middle of those big teeming cities America was beginning to have, and people playing baseball there. And an Indian appears. This actually happened. His name was Louis Sockalexis. Came from Old Town, Maine. He had as much talent as anybody had ever seen on the field, and he drank himself out of baseball very quickly and had kind of a tragic life. And so I realized that when you ask certain baseball questions, all of a sudden, all these different forces, these different tracks of the energy, these different things going on in America come together. So that was a nonfiction book. It's a lot of fun doing that. And so after doing the nonfiction book, Elaine, I was really interested in the story of the first Indian, so I wrote a novel called The Cleveland Indian. And it's very similar as to, why would you write a novel instead of writing a nonfiction book? Well, I wanted to change the story. I wanted my Indian to last longer. He does all sorts of wild things in the novel, but he's not an alcoholic like the actual first Indian was. And when you write a historical novel, you go into a time and a place and you learn all these things, but you can do the what if. And of course, in my Cleveland Indian novel, I have a narrator who's a young lawyer for the team who's, you know, very much based on someone like me, a combination of hero worship and wanting to be a writer and loving baseball and finding baseball almost a home in an alternative world, a reality to the one that he actually came from. Now, I'm not a Native American, and I wouldn't attempt to write a novel from the point of view of a Native American, but it was a lot of fun writing a novel from the point of view of a young man like perhaps I was, though this guy's better looking and smarter than me, at the age of 28, being involved with a wild, self-destructive, fascinating, athletic genius.
Well, I've met you, and you're pretty good looking, by the way.
Thank you. I have the face for radio. You know, I wrote a novel about early Hollywood called Hollywood and Sunset, in which the same character, when he was younger, who was involved with the Cleveland Indian, is now gone out to California. He's a writer to interview D.W. Griffith. And D.W. Griffith is a very controversial to this day figure because he made the most racist movie ever made, Birth of a Nation. Not only is it the most racist movie, it sort of invented Hollywood. It was the first blockbuster. It made so much money, this is in 1915, that they couldn't count it. In fact, I'll tell you a story. I live in Chelsea, Massachusetts, which is right over the bridge from Boston. There was a junk man from Chelsea, Massachusetts, who owned two theaters, movie theaters, one in Haverhill, one in Lawrence. He skimmed so much money off the top because Griffith didn't have a national distribution, then you just bought the rights and you were supposed to give him the money. He skimmed so much money off the top, he decided to move to Los Angeles and get in the movie business himself. His name was Louis B. Mayer.
Oh, my God.
He ended up founding Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. He did, the junk man from Chelsea, Massachusetts, did quite well now in Los Angeles, Elaine, novels still need to have to be about race.
Okay, Luke. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. You are such a great storyteller. Readers, you should pick up the novels. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine.
All right, bye.